ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 50 and 51. We'll do 50 together, the Sanskrit. Archita hridaye chapi yathalabdho pacharakai dravya shityatma lingani Nishpadya Prokshachasanam Archadau Hridaye Chapi Yathalabdho Pacharakai Dravya Shityatma Lingani Nishpadya Prokshachasanam Archadau Hridaye Chapi Yathalabdho Pacharakai Dravya Shityatma Lingani Nishpadya Prokshachasanam Ladies. Then we can do 51 together. Padyadin upakalpyata. Let's just all do it together. Sanijapa samahita vidyadidi kritanyaso mula mantrena charache. Word for word. Archa adau. In the form of the deity and its paraphernalia. Hridaye, in the heart. Cha api, also. Yata labdha, whatever is available. Upacharakai, with ingredients of worship. Dravya, the physical items to be offered. Chiti, the ground. Atma, one's own mind. Lingani, and the deity. Nishpadya, preparing. Proksha, sprinkling with water for purification. Cha, and. Asanam, one seat. Padya adin, the water for bathing the deity's feet and other offerings. Upakalpya. Getting ready. Ata. Then. Sanidhyapa. Placing the deity in its proper place. Samahita. Concentrating one's attention. Trit Adibi. On the deity's heart and other places of the body. Kritanyasa, having drawn sacred marks. Mula Mantrena, with the appropriate basic mantra for worshiping the particular deity. Cha, and Archayate, one should offer worship. Translation purport by the disciples of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The devotee should gather whatever ingredients for worshiping the deity are available. Make ready the offerings, the ground, his mind, and the deity. Sprinkle his sitting place with water for purification, and prepare the bathing water and other paraphernalia. The devotee should then place the deity in his proper place, both physically and within his own mind. Concentrate his attention and mark the deity's heart and other parts of the body with tilak. Then he should offer worship with the appropriate mantra. Report. Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Hijiva Dao Swayameva Svaratyada in the Padma Purana. The absolute truth can never be understood by ordinary material sense perception. The conditioned souls engrossed in the vain pursuit of material sense gratification are completely indifferent to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their materially conditioned minds are always impure and disturbed by the endless flow of material dualities, such as prosperity and poverty, winter and summer, fame and infamy, youth and old age. Such disturbed conditioned souls cannot recognize the personal presence of the absolute truth in the form of the deity. The Lord's incarnation as Archa Avatar, the deity form, is a special manifestation of the Lord's mercy toward the materialistic or neophyte devotees who are still under the influence of material designations. They are unable to perceive the Lord in his eternal abode, and therefore the Lord descends as the deity form, manifesting the Prakash incarnations and even the Swayam Prakash, or the original form of the Lord. The Prakash incarnations exhibit various pastimes within this world, whereas Swayam Prakash, the Lord's original form, is the source of all avatars. To one who sincerely worships the deity manifests himself as the supreme personality of Godhead. Those who are most unfortunate cannot even recognize the Supreme Lord in his merciful deity expansion. They consider the deity an ordinary material object. But by surrendering at the lotus feet of the bona fide spiritual master, who is a pure devotee of the Lord, one can learn to worship the deity, as mentioned in this verse, and thus revive one's lost relationship with the Lord. One who considers such transcendental deity worship to be equivalent to idol worship is grossly covered by the three modes of material nature. A person wearing rose-colored glasses sees the entire world to be rose-colored. Similarly, those unfortunate living entities who are thickly covered by the material modes of nature, see everything, including the Supreme Lord, as material due to their polluted vision. Om Jnanatmanandasya Jnanjana Salakaya Chaksurun Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpajyugyascha Kripa Sindhu Bibhicha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is called Liberation from Illusory Energy. And this purport and verse helps us to explain one of the ways that we become free from this illusory energy. And that is the process of deity worship as a method of purification. The purport begins by describing the problem. How can the material mind and the senses understand transcendence? In other words, if our mind, our senses, our intelligence are all materially contaminated, all products of material nature, how could we possibly understand those things which are transcendental, which are on the spiritual level, which are beyond the mind and the senses. So this is a question that comes up several times in our scriptures, and of course it's a very good question, and one that fortunately we have very good answers from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, this was one of the primary questions in chapter 87 of the Eighth Canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the prayers by personified Vedas. At the end of that chapter, there's a recap of the question. Text 50 says, "Thus I have replied to you the question you asked me, O King, concerning how the mind can have access to the absolute truth, which is indescribable by material world, indescribable by material words and devoid of material qualities." So in other words, if the absolute truth is beyond anything material, beyond material worlds, how can it be described? How can we understand material qualities with our material qualities, how can we understand that which is beyond material? Of course, many people take this question and they give a very simple answer. Well, we can't know God, right? Many people say, if God is beyond our senses, beyond everything, beyond our intelligence, obviously, maybe there's an absolute truth, but we can't know it. You hear this from many people, that somehow the absolute is something unknowable, unfathomable, certainly beyond our human capabilities. In that sense, they are correct. I mean, that's better than saying those who say we can understand everything through our material science or through our empiric methods, we'll be able to absolutely pin down, you know, the complete truth. So at least it's a little more honest saying that the absolute or God is beyond our material senses, beyond our intelligence. But that doesn't mean that God is unknowable. And so in the previous verse in chapter 87, text 1087-49, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a very simple one-line answer to this question. It's very clear. Vishnu says, "The mind can perceive God by the power of devotion, bhakti, arising from the mercy of the Supreme Lord." So that's the answer, basically, to the entire thing, that, you know, the incredibly deep philosophy presented by the prayers of personified Vedas. Does anybody remember the first time you read that when you were reading Krishna book, and how I just sort of blurred over it, you know, and very, very difficult to understand in the beginning. Now it's seeming to become a little more clear, hopefully, as we study a little bit more, because this is the central question. And the very simple answer is, by the mercy of the Lord, he helps to purify us through the process of bhakti, and we're able to perceive that which is beyond the mind and senses. We're able to perceive transcendence. So there's a very similar statement, in one sense, or a very similar answer, given in the beginning of this purport with the Satak Sri Krishnanamadi verse. It's not exactly translated here, it's explained, but I'll give you Prabhupada's translation. This is from C.C. Mudge 17.136. It's also quoted in Bhaktisamrita Sindhu 1.2.234. It's originally from the Padma Purana. Prabhupada translates, "Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified, and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is." So this is the process of spiritual purification. By engaging the material senses and mind with spiritual objects, those material senses no longer act materially, but become spiritualized. And of course, Prabhupada's given many very familiar examples or analogies. There's the example of the iron rod, right? You take an iron rod that's made out of iron, but you put, like a blacksmith might or something, put it in the fire and it becomes red hot. And that iron rod now has all the qualities of fire. It gives off heat, it gives off light, it acts as fire. It's still an iron rod, but it's acting like fire. So in the same way, we have these material bodies, and while we're in this material world, they certainly are made of material elements. But if we become completely Krishna conscious, if those material elements, our senses, our mind, become completely purified, then they are spiritual, because they are acting in the service of the Lord. So through engagement of the senses in spiritual activities, the purification process will begin. A very important part of that purifying process is the process of deity worship. And in fact, Krishna has so kindly come in his Archa Vigraha incarnation, an avatar, in that form, for our purification primarily. So it's a very important part of our Krishna conscious activities. It's a very important part of our sadhana that we regularly worship the deity of the Lord. And this way, we become less and less attached to material objects and to the material senses and begin to shift that attachment to Krishna, to pleasing Krishna's senses. And by pleasing Krishna's senses, our own senses become purified. Srila Prabhupada explains this in a purport from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 776. Although it is correct that one who fully engages in chanting the holy name need not depend upon the process of initiation, generally a devotee is addicted to many abominable material habits due to material contamination from his previous life. In order to get quick relief from all of these contaminations, it is required that one engage in the worship of the Lord in the temple. Since every conditioned soul has a bodily concept of life aimed at sense enjoyment, to restrict the sense enjoyment, the rules and regulations for worshiping the deity of the temple are essential. So the first aspect is simply that we need to calm the senses, that we need to refocus our senses, refocus our mind, our activities on something that is spiritual. And the deity allows us that opportunity to serve them, to be able to engage ourselves fully, and as Prabhupada is saying, to calm the mind which is filled with these material contaminations. Now, beyond that, beyond simply that sort of calming process or re-engagement process of focusing the mind and our activities and our work on something, beyond our material conceptions, the senses are becoming purified while this is happening. And there's another nice verse also from the Narada Pancharatna, quoted in Nectar Devotion and Chaitanya Charitamrita, as you probably know, Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paradena Nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ushite. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all of our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. Anybody remember the two side effects? Well, knowledge and detachment are given in other verses. They're a little different in this verse. It says, one is we become freed from all material designation and one's senses are purified. So those two effects are mentioned when we engage our senses in process of deity worship or other acts of bhakti. We become, in other words, we get off the bodily concept. We understand that we're the spirit soul. That knowledge of our spiritual, real spiritual life, the identity of the jiva becomes, resurrected within us, becomes prominent. We understand that we are actually a pure spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, a devotee of Krishna. That knowledge becomes enlivened within us, and the senses are becoming purified also. So there's great benefit in this deity worship. It's not simply a mechanical process that, okay, now little by little, I'm getting, how much purification am I getting? Now I'm 5%, now I'm 6%, something like that. But actually, we're developing great love for the personality of Godhead. And there's some incredible assurances of the value of this process given in the Nectar Devotion. Of course, we know that deity worship is one of the five essential processes that are given by Rupa Goswami. So many of the glories of deity worship are mentioned. That's in the, it's in the second chapter of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's in the ninth chapter of Nectar Devotion. There's many, many quotes there. I'll just read a couple of these. The Naradiya Purana says, the person who has once offered respects, bowing down before the deity, will not come back to this world, because he will go directly to the abode of Krishna. That's pretty good. All right. Now, you get that from bowing down before the deity. You get to go back to Krishna. Bihari Bhakti Suhodaya says, Persons who are impelled by pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness and therefore go to see the deities of Vishnu in the temple will surely get relief from entering into the prison house of the mother's womb. There's a saying, you won't take birth again. So, in other words, very, very powerful process, this deity devotion, which is worshiping Krishna. Krishna so much sees that little bit of devotion, and there's such reciprocation reward. Now, of course, some people will ask, well, that's all very nice, but isn't Krishna everywhere? We say, yes, Krishna is. Krishna is Paramatma. He's in the heart of every living entity. Krishna, the Paramatma, is within every atom and probably between every atom. And we know that the Brahman effulgence of Krishna pervades this entire spiritual and material universes. So, and we could see Krishna in his Virata Rupa and all the different material. So in other words, a advanced devotee sees Krishna everywhere. If Krishna is everywhere, why do we need to come to the temple? Why do we need to see the deity? Well, there's many explanations for that, but one prophet gives in the Bhagavad Gita purport 934. He says, there are also many impersonalists who deride temple worship. They say, since God is everywhere, why should one restrict himself to temple worship? But if God is everywhere, then is he certainly not in the temple and the deity? Although his personal abode is in Goloka Vrindavan, he's always staying there. By his different manifestations of energy and by his plenary expansion, he is present everywhere in all parts of the material and spiritual creation. So certainly, if Krishna is everywhere, he's certainly within his own Archavigraha form. And of course, we also know that Krishna particularly manifests himself according to his authorized forms. Probably gives the example, if you're going to mail a letter, and you build a wooden box outside your house and you stick your letters in that, they're probably not going anywhere, are they? They're probably sitting there and basically, whatever, turning yellow in that box. But if you go to the authorized mailbox on the corner and you put your letter in that, it's going to get delivered. So in the same way, Krishna gives us ways by which he accepts our service. And the deity forms are authorized by Krishna as those vehicles or instruments by which he accepts our service. And why? Because they are the bona fide forms of the Lord. They're not just some concocted form that you build something or carve something and you think, oh, this is an interesting thing and it sort of seems symbolic of God to me, so this is a deity. No. These are the authorized forms that are given to us in the scriptures, in the Bhagavatam, of Krishna and his incarnations. And we also understand, because Krishna is completely spiritual, everything about Krishna is spiritual. His form, his name, his activities, his incarnations, right? His paraphernalia, everything is non-different from him. So if Krishna is non-different from his name, his form, his activities, then Krishna is non-different from his form. When he manifests himself as the deity form of Shyamasundara. So we understand that Krishna is there in that form. He enters into the form of the deity for the purpose of accepting our service. Now somebody might also say that deity worship was the Yuga Dharma for the last Yuga, right? For Dwapara Yuga. Well, they switch in this. I'm never sure about that between Treta and Dwapara, because in this particular yuga cycle, those two switch. But at any rate, formerly, deity worship was the way to achieve spiritual realization. And we know that in this Kali Yuga, the process of spiritual realization is Harinam Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. So isn't just the chanting of the holy name more important than deity worship? Sometimes even devotees ask that. Sometimes even particularly devotees who are, very, very attached to spreading the holy name and through book distribution like that, sometimes felt deity worship wasn't so important, and that was for the devotees who couldn't go out on Sankirtan. They had to stay back and worship the deity or something like that. It was an inferior process. Of course, this is a material conception, seeing those kind of distinctions. Even Divyanga's laughing because he knows that's obviously not true. Prabhupada says, he talks about these processes, Apanchara, Trikavidhi, and Bhagavat Marg. We know Prabhupada sometimes described these as like the two parallel tracks of this Krishna conscious movement, that we have both the Pantratriki, which is the regulated processes of deity worship, and the Bhagavat Marg, which is the processes of hearing and chanting. And both are complementary. They work together to help us to become Krishna conscious. This is from 4.13.2, Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are two different ways of approaching the Supreme Lord. One is called Bhagavad Marg, or the way of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the other is called Pantratriki Vidi. Pantratrika Vidi is the method of temple worship, and Bhagavad Vidi is the system of nine processes which begin with hearing and chanting. The Krishna conscious movement accepts both processes simultaneously and thus enables one to make steady progress on the path of realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a little in the Bhagavatam 4.24.25, Prabhupada states it even more emphatically. He says, no one can worship the Lord in the Bhagavad Vidi without going through the regulations of Pantratriki Vidi. So both are needed. We can't simply just go off and chant Hare Krishna and pay no attention to temple worship and deity worship. And we also can't just worship the deity and not chant Hare Krishna. So both have to be there. And they work together for our purification. And of course, they are part of our, you know, as Rupa Goswami said, our five primary principles of devotional service. So we have both hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees. But we also have living in a holy place and worshiping the deity. So, you know, those are those two sort of aspects of our Krishna conscious practice are represented in the primary processes given to us by the acharyas. Another thing that we should understand is, in one hand, in the purport, in the second paragraph, it mentioned that the deity forms a special manifestation of the Lord's mercy toward the materialistic or neophyte devotee under the influence of material designations. That's obviously true. In other words, for people who, for all of us as neophytes, we're not able to see Krishna directly or always feel Krishna's presence or realize that Krishna is everywhere. We can easily see Krishna in his deity form. We can take shelter of the deity, and we can have some realization and render service to Krishna through his deity. So the deity is very much appreciated and advocated for neophyte devotees. But deity worship is not just for neophyte devotees, it is also for advanced devotees. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his instructions to the Goswamis of Vrindavan, he gave them two different sets of instructions, right? One was to write books on the science of Krishna consciousness and also to establish temples. So again, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving both parts. The Pantratriki, in fact, Sanatana Goswami, he wrote Hari Bhakta Vilas? Hari Bhakta Vilas, which was a Vaishnav process of deity worship. And it was a little more attuned to Vaishnav worship, a little bit updated. And so Sanatana Goswami writes the Hari Bhakta Vilas, which, you know, so the process of deity worship of regulated Pantratriki system was given there for the Vaishnavs. And at the same time, the philosophy was given. They showed example of constantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, and even later generations actually began preaching. All right, we had the famous Sankirtan party going out of Narottam, Srinivas, and Lokanath. Who was it? Shamananda, right, under the direction of Lokanath. Yeah, so we see these wonderful examples in our acharyas. We also see that it was not simply something where the Goswamis felt, well, for the neophyte devotees, we need to establish temples. Because we see and we hear in our scriptures some incredibly wonderful relationships and deep, deep realization that these great devotees have in relationship with the deities. And there's so many wonderful pastimes like Sanatana Goswami and the Madan Mohan deity, you know, in the boat and all of that. And, you know, and the one that I always think about is Madhavendra Puri. And Madhavendra Puri, you know, he had these incredible relationships with two different deities, right? You know, who were speaking to him. First, his deity in Vrindavan was Gopal, told him to go and get the sandalwood, And then he goes to, you know, and finally he gets to the Gopinath deity, right? It's called Shirachara Gopinath, right? And that deity also, not only does he have his personal relationship, that's, you know, the deity steals the sweet rice for him, you know, and then that deity speaks to the Bajari, tells the Bajari to go find Madhavendrapuri, bring him back, you know, so it's like, you know, these amazing, amazing pastimes go on between, you know, the deity form of Krishna and their pure devotees. You know, and you can find so many examples like this. And so for the advanced devotee, for us who are neophytes, Krishna accepts our service in the form of the deity. As one advances, that relationship develops where the advanced devotee understands that Krishna in his deity form is non-different than Krishna. It is Krishna. There's no difference. Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan, Radhashada Shamasundar, right here in front of us, they're one and the same. There is no difference. There may seem to be some difference materially, but there is really no difference. And, you know, we simply need to pray to the deities that someday we will have that realization, that that realization will grow in our hearts and understand their true nature will manifest to us. Here's a very nice purport and verse for Srila Prabhupada that talks about this a little bit, about how the advanced devotee relishes a personal relationship with Krishna and his deity form. The verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-35, and it says, "O my mother," this is Kapila Dev, "my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent, and they also talk favorably with me." So devotees are having these nice conversations with Krishna and his deity form. Okay, I've cut a little bit, it's a very long purport, but I try to keep the gist of Prabhupada's purport here. "Mayavadis and atheists accept the forms of the deity in the temple of the Lord as idols, but devotees do not worship idols. They directly worship the personality of Godhead in his Archa incarnation. Archa refers to the form which we can worship in our present condition. Actually, in our present state, it is not possible to see God in his spiritual form because our material eyes and senses cannot conceive of a spiritual form. In order to be seen by our material senses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts a favorable form which is called Archa Vigraha. This Archa Vigraha is not different from him. There are many Shastric injunctions which give instructions for carving forms of the Lord, but these forms are not material. If God is all-pervading, then he's also in the material elements. The devotee's vision is smeared with the love of God. As soon as they see the Lord in his different forms, the devotees become saturated with love, for they do not find any difference between the Lord and his form in the temple, as do the atheists. The smiling face of the deity in the temple is beheld by devotees as transcendental and spiritual. And the decoration of the body of the Lord is very much appreciated by the devotees." It's like whenever we come in and we appreciate the beautiful decorations of the Lord, and that's meant to attract us, to attract our hearts. "There are different procedures and rules and regulations which are followed in the temples of Vishnu, and devotees go there and see the deity. And they spiritually enjoy the form because all the deities are benevolent." Very kind. "The devotees express their mind before the deity. And in many instances, the deity also gives answers." Okay? So we go and we pray to the deities, we speak to the deities, and you may get an answer. "But one must be very elevated devotee in order to be able to speak with the Supreme Lord. Sometimes the Lord informs the devotee through dreams. These exchanges of feelings between the deity and the devotees are not understandable by the atheist, but actually the devotees enjoy them." So, of course, this is, as Prabhupada said, this is an elevated devotee. It's a very elevated state, but it is something that is not totally beyond us. It's something that we can begin to enter into, begin to understand a little bit. And I know that devotees, like many pujaris who worship the deities very regularly, you know, they have different experiences and realizations, you know, about Krishna, and they feel reciprocation. I think that's what it is, even if we can't necessarily say, well, Krishna just speaks to me directly, you know, through the deity. But Krishna does give us realization through the heart. Right? Krishna does reveal himself in many, many ways to us. And we reveal our heart to the deity, and we do feel that reciprocation that happens. And for the pure devotee, you know, you can only imagine, you know, what is going on. You know, Srila Prabhupada, whenever he was visiting temples, you know, usually he'd go on his morning walk, at least whenever I saw, the times I saw Srila Prabhupada, usually the schedule wasn't always this way, but often he would go out in the morning, go on a morning walk, and then he'd come back to the temple for the greeting of the deities, right? Somebody experienced that? And then, you know, and then Prabhupada, he would always go and offer his obeisances, just like we do in front of all the deities, you know, and then he'd come back to the Vyasasan and sit down and usually give Bhagavatam class. At least that often happens, sometimes it varied. But I remember one time in Potomac in 1976, Srila Prabhupada was there, and for some reason, I don't know how this happened, I ended up kind of being right behind him or right next to him when he was offering his obeisances, or I was right towards the front. And then it came to the last, you know, and Prabhupada's, you know, I couldn't really see his face because Prabhupada's really just intently meditating on Radha Madan Mohan and, you know, the deities there in Potomac. And then he turns around, you know, to go to the Vyasasan, and, you know, I just witnessed this just amazing, Prabhupada was just completely glowing, brilliant effulgence, you know, and you could just see in his eyes that, you know, he had just experienced a relationship with God. You know, he was seen probably talking to Krishna in the deity form. And, you know, it was very apparent that this, you know, something very amazing had happened. You can just tell from his presence, you know, that, you know, the type of spiritual relationship, and this is what Prabhupada's talking about. This kind of reciprocation relationship that the advanced pure devotee experiences with Krishna, experiences with the deity of Krishna. Because having that experience with Radha Shyama Sundar is no different than being with Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. Anyway, again, that's an elevated state that, you know, we can only pray for and hope that someday that we have more and more realization of Krishna in his deity form. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, discussion, Madan Mohan Prabhu. Speaking of Madan Mohan deity.
It reminded me of a story. In 1980, I went back to visit my hometown, Baltimore, and my son was 5 years old there. So they invited over a bunch of rabbis, and when they were in the house, they separated my son, who was 5 years old, from me, and they questioned him about the deities.
Your son?
Yeah. Wow. Because he was 5 years old, so they figured they'd start a chant. So they said, well, if God's everywhere, why do you worship the deity? Just like what you said in the class here. So here's 5 years old. He says, well, the deities, I mean, God is everywhere in person, but he's personally there in the deity.
Pretty good.
I don't know if he'd say it now, but I mean, he said...
And that was before he got all his good training at BV.
We were on our way.
We were Vedanta and his family. We were all together at Bhaktivedanta Village Gurukula back in the 80s,
yeah,
I guess.
80s,
I don't know what it was.
81, 86.
Yeah.
But they actually do say those things, just like that. How can?
Oh yeah.
So
that's why these Prabhupada mentions it several times, because this is the argument, and it was nice that he had such a good answer.
So this seems a little conflicting, but Lord Krishna says you could worship means eight different forms. I mean, the deities can be carved in eight different ways,
yeah.
And one should do that. And then we know in the instructions in the Bible it states, "Thou shall worship no." Image.
Which Purana is that?
No, that's...
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I mean, if you were faced with such a question, I mean, how would you How would you explain that?
Well, they're actually true. One should not worship a graven image. And the example of the graven image was right, was it a calf? That they formed out of gold and like that. And that is idolatry. And we don't believe in idolatry either. Worshipping the deity is not an idol, as Prabhupada was explaining. It's the authorized form of the Lord, where Krishna incarnates his own form, the deities. It's not something that's concocted, you know, but it's actually the authorized form where Krishna comes to accept that love. So we agree, one shouldn't just worship idols. One should worship the authorized Archivigraha incarnation. Yes.
Real family, household life. One part of Prabhupada is that you mentioned that about the four jugas, the dwap, not in tre. Prabhupada writes that actually deity installed, and then he gives a reason. He said, general public, when they lost respecting the saintly people, in spiritual life is doomed. So seeing these, the saintly people, the service is very much effective to the common public who does not have a faith on the Vaishnavas or the philosophy.
Okay. Yeah, the microphone was breaking up a little bit. But I think you were saying essentially that because people have lost faith in saintly personalities and they're not properly respecting and worshiping the Vaishnavas, at least they may come to the temple. Yeah, and that's why sometimes it's described that, you know, that deity worship is sometimes connected with that idea of a kanishta or third class devotee. It's not that worshiping the deity is third class or is kanishta, but those who are kanishtas may only see Krishna sometimes in the deity and not understand Krishna in the Vaishnavas or the Guru. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Jai. Reminds me of that famous room conversation in Hawaii, I think it was 75, Purijan Prabhu. And the whole thing's about book distribution, and there was controversy how some people thought we were too aggressive going out and selling books. And Prabhupada kept saying the answer was, well, I tell them to do it. So I tell my disciples to be aggressive and go out and sell books. And they go on and on about it, how some people are offended because wherever they go, they see Krishna devotees pushing books and ask. But at the very end of that long room conversation, Prabhupada was talking about the other community in Hawaii at the time, and he said that this deity worship is very important for grihasthas, for their sadhana, and he mentioned at the end to remain clean. And we notice that in our homes, in our personal deity worship, when you have the deity there, you have your little altar there, it influences your whole life. Everything about your life, when you buy things and bring things, it's for the deity, and all the food and everything must be done right. So there's a whole, it gives us a standard. And Prabhupada said, if householders don't do deity worship, they won't be clean. That was the last thing he said in that long conversation. So it's very essential, deity worship. And he also says that Krishna is here in the temple so we can come and see him. And if we come enough, we get the impression of the Lord in our minds, and then we can remember. And he says, by bowing down, you get credit notes. And Prabhupada says, you get enough of these credit notes, then you can purchase the Lord.
Thank you, it's very nice. And when I was preparing, as I saw, I came across many, many quotes from Srila Prabhupada talking about the necessity of, particularly householders, worshiping the deity. So that's a very good point. I just didn't have time to really develop that and go into that one. But it is a very good point that it's particularly important, she said, for the purification, cleanliness, and the idea is that your home becomes Krishna's home, right? In other words, your home becomes a temple of Krishna's there and form the deity. Yeah, Radhadamati? I think we're losing the battery on that.
I remember back in the 80s when I was at Bhaktivinoda Village, and I was doing pujari work, and I was watching my youngest son, Kurt Thomas, he was about five then, and that I closed the curtains and everything. We put mats in front of all the altars, and And then I went back towards the kitchen. When I came back, Her Tamasha was lying down on the floor, and he's looking under the curtain. What are you doing? He said, you see that mat there? Krishna's going to come down and sit on it. And I said, yes, he does that, but we have to leave him alone for a few minutes. Yeah.
Five. See, our five-year-olds at Bhaktivedanta Village were very advanced. Yeah. Actually, so several of us were there at that time. You know. Anyway, it was mostly due to the good management there, I think. Thank you very much. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.